This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living on the Bigger Picture. I'm T. Shawik. Malaysia is on the fast track to become an aged society by 2044, or perhaps even sooner, with a larger percentage of our population made up of people aged 65 and above. But with a recent announcement by EPF's Chief Strategy Officer Nur Hisham Hussein that only 3% of EPF contributors can afford retirement, there are concerns that our older population won't have a sufficient social security net for their later years. So I'd like to discuss how we can tackle financial insecurity among older adults in our healthy aging segment today, and also the impact of financial issues on the mental health and the mental well-being of older adults and what we need to be mindful of. My guests joining me today, gerontologist and founder of Seniors Aloud, Lily Fu, and consultant psychiatrist Dr. Wan Izwin Wan Hassan, who specializes in geriatric psychiatry. Hello, how are the both of you today?
Great, feeling great.
Yes, feeling great today. Thank you so much for inviting us. It's wonderful to share our experience and knowledge in this matter. So thank you very much for organizing this.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time. It's coming on the back of this, quite alarming news, although I suppose it doesn't come as a surprise. There have been red alerts in recent years already that, the pension fund isn't able to really support the population that it's meant to benefit, and there have been a lot of sort of policy decisions and other things that have led to the situation where we are today. But what we want to do is try and take a look at, at the community level, particularly, how can we be more mindful of our financial issues for older adults and their independence as well. But Lee, to start with, how common are financial concerns among older adults in our community, and specifically, what are the issues that they typically face?
This is the number one problem that they all have: financial security and protection. In fact, we're going to have a webinar on this, right, in 2 days' time. And I have also found out by speaking to my community of seniors that many of them are living alone. Now, this is an extra risk. And the number of elderly singles living alone is going up very, very fast. Right now, I think we have about close to between 80,000 to 100,000 of seniors, elderly seniors living on their own. I'm not sure how they're going to manage, because not all of them, we all know, right, they're all like cash poor, but maybe asset rich. But not all of them are in this category. They could be both asset poor and cash poor as well. And these are the most vulnerable. They do need much more support because they have no family to refer to depend on. So unfortunately, they are excluded in general from the big group, those who are entitled to get help, for example, because they are not disabled in the first place. They are not, OKU. So then they do have some money, they do have some property, but that won't see them through, because we all know about longevity, right? People are living longer, 15 to 20 years longer after they retire. How are they going to support themselves? This is a huge group that's very vulnerable.
And, I want to get a real sense of how it impacts them in terms of daily lives, whether it could be, supporting themselves, addressing their medical costs, perhaps, how is this situation affecting their ability to really lead independent lives?
Well, first of all, we are lucky in the sense that our healthcare here is very affordable. If you go to government hospitals and so forth, right? But then not everybody was, up for the government, especially during this pandemic time, right? So there's not much choice for them, actually. And for the elderly, as I've said earlier, if they live alone, there's no one to help them out. And if they do have family, like children, for example, the children themselves may not be able to commit to helping them out. So they need options. They need sources where they can get help. And as I've said earlier, they don't have much cash with them. They may have property, but property does not translate into expenses, money for daily living.
And Dr. Izwin, we often hear that there is no health without wealth. But if we flip it around, how important is financial security in older age within the context of health?
So within the context of health, I think I echo what Lily mentioned about having sort of when you have wealth, you have more purchasing power to buy health. We know that healthcare, it can be quite expensive. And as Lily mentioned, it's also about being able to afford a variety of healthcare needs. And also, I think it's not just about the healthcare, it's also about the support in terms of having with older people, they may need support with activities of daily living, being able to shop, and even in terms of like purchasing food, for example. So older people might find it quite difficult to cook for themselves, and they may feel more comfortable to order out. But those things cost money. So when you think about how having financial security is not just the whole, you know, being able to afford medical care as part of, you know, having sufficient wealth, it is also about being able to afford the other things that comes with it. For example, supplements, physiotherapy, you know, equipment around the house, for example, adaptation. So we're talking about a bigger picture that's more than just having, you know, enough money just to purchase the day-to-day things. And you know, this is where I think when we have financial insecurity, it becomes extremely difficult for older people, because asking for help in those sense can be, you know, can be quite difficult to access. For example, Lily talked about, you know, asking children for money or asking help from the government. You know, there's just not enough financial assistance or funds out there to support these basic necessities, actually. But they're quite difficult to gain without the proper wealth, if you put it in that context. So this in many ways affects this person's health because of you know, these restrictions on the access of certain packages of healthcare due to the restrictions around how much financial abilities they have.
And Lily, Dr. Izwin brought up sort of all the financial assistance that may be available. So if, I mean, I started by mentioning the EPF, but what is the actual, the entire picture or the ecosystem of social security nets that should be made available to help older adults?
Well, I'm not sure, you know, as you have seen, I don't know about this 3% thing. I don't know whether it is the correct figure or whether it's quoted out of context, but it's really alarming. And they don't have really have much, what do you call it, resources to go to approach regarding financial support. So the only other thing besides EPF, if you don't have enough, is to get a job so that they can support themselves and be independent. But the, again, here we find a challenge. And the challenge is in ageism. There's so much of, you know, discrimination against hiring older workers. So I feel that, you know, maybe the employers feel that, oh, you got to pay them higher wages and, you know, the health is, you know. But then the you know, the older people themselves, when I say older, I'm talking about those still able, still fit, still healthy, right? They themselves should, you know, be able to be a bit more flexible when negotiating with potential employers, right? You don't go and demand, you know, that salary that you were last paid. And you should not demand this and demand that. I mean, both parties should come to a very nice kind of agreement, where it's a mutual win-win kind of situation, right? So seniors themselves, they have to be flexible in that sense if they want help from other sources.
Dr. Izwin, from a psychological perspective, I suppose, you know, what is the psyche of the older adult going into that phase of life where they may still need to support themselves, but there's also a discriminatory attitude towards older people. You know, perhaps you could help us get into that mindset from the observations of the older adults that you've worked with.
So from my observation, so there's a few issues that I think older adults face in terms of seeking employment. So a lot of them feel that, you know, now that they've come to retirement, they're supposed to put their feet up and relax, and the idea of having to work is actually, you know, for some of them, yes, they do find that it fills their time and it's empowering, but for others, it feels like you know, I've done my, you know, I've done my slog, if you like, I've done my job. I want to rest now. I just want to sit around and play with the grandchildren. So that kind of feeling, you know, is part of the psychological impact of having to work, you know, after your golden years. But applying for job, you're right, there's ageism. There may be some employers can be a little inflexible in terms of the hours. So when you're older, you may not necessarily be able to work very early in the morning, or you may find it hard to do long hours. So those are the kind of things that it's useful for them, as they mentioned, to negotiate in terms of if there's some flexibility, not just in the salary sense, but in terms of the physical stamina and the physical ability and the mental stamina and ability in order to engage in these tasks at work. And what's kind of acceptable, what's not acceptable. So things like heavy lifting may be quite difficult, but something like maybe within the admin type, admin tasks might be a bit easier. And when faced with, you know, kind of sort of a lot of barriers in applying or starting work, this can have adverse effects on this person's psychological well-being. They may feel a bit low in their self-esteem. They may feel a bit down. They may also develop a lot of anxiety about the work. They feel inadequate, unprepared to take on the tasks. And that could lead to other mental health issues, you know, in the long term, where they start feeling like they're, you know, they're not up to the job. And I do see this in my clinical practice about, you know, a lot of my older patients who feel that they should have been retired but have to work due to financial issues, and they come and see me and they have sleep difficulties, they have anxieties, and on top of that, they have additional stress. You know, they've been diagnosed with new conditions, heart diseases, and you know, all this kind of plays into their psyche. Their psychological impact is quite huge for these people, because, as you know, a lot of them kind of have this mental image of, when I retire, I'm just going to sit in the garden and relax, and suddenly they're finding themselves, I can't afford to do this, I've got to work, and, you know, it's not fair, but I have no choice, and that can have quite a huge impact on their mental health and well-being.
So, Lily, how do we manage this sort of push and pull, this interplay of all these factors? Culturally, I suppose, have you seen a shift in attitudes among older adults in the community towards changing that mindset of what their retirement should look like?
Yeah, I agree totally, you know, with Dr. Wan, right, regarding all this mental stress that they're suffering from. It's just not financial, you know, a lack of financial support alone. They are also facing physical health issues, psychological, everything rolled into one big package of a cloud, a gray cloud hanging over them, you know, the head. So it is very, very tough on them. And there's also the added fear of, you know, death and dying, you know, anytime, you know, for falls a lot. It's a whole big, huge mountain of a burden. So, you know, what can they do? I'm happy to say that I've noticed 10 years ago when we first started thinking about aging problems and challenges, right? There was very, very little talk about it. Not many people were not even concerned about the issue, even including the older people themselves. But I'm happy to say that over the years, we see more and more talks, more and more webinars, more and more campaigns to educate not only the elderly, but the younger, those in the 40s, 50s, you know, early 60s will be the young old, to be more aware that they need to prepare. And not only just to prepare, but to prepare early as possible. Not just to prepare the foundation, to lay the foundation for financial security, but also for health, right? Their health must have good health for as long as possible. The focus now is not so much on longevity or longer lifespan, but longer lifespan or longer health span. Let's put it this way, longer health span, so that you can live to a ripe old age, 60, 70, 80, still in relatively good health and enjoying life and leaving minimal, you know, support, financial support, because you're able to kind of adjust your lifestyle. Because once you're older or retired, you have to downsize, you have to adjust your life, your lifestyle, so that whatever money you have in your savings, EPF or your pension, can carry you through the extra longer years.
Let's go for a quick break now. And after that, Lily, I want to get your thoughts on the idea of raising the retirement age as our workforce becomes older as well. On the line with me today are Lily Fu, gerontologist and founder of Seniors Aloud, and Dr. Wan Iswin Wan Hassan, consultant psychiatrist specializing in geriatric psychiatry. We're discussing the importance of financial security in old age. We'll be right back on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyi. Joining me on Zoom today are Lily Fu, gerontologist and founder of Seniors Aloud, and Dr. Wan Iswin Wan Hassan, consultant psychiatrist specializing in geriatric psychiatry. It's our Healthy Aging series. And today we're discussing the importance of financial security for the physical and mental well-being of older adults. And this is coming on the back of recent news that, reported that only 3% of our EPF contributors in the country can afford retirement currently. So Lily, one option that has been brought up as a potential policy move is increasing the retirement age, as well as increasing the EPF withdrawal age from to 65 from the current age of 60. But what I'm getting from you is that this is just one initiative sort of at that end point when people have, sort of reached that age. But, what you've been talking about is really planning from years ahead, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. So I was checking the EPF portal earlier. And I was a bit surprised, to see that, it can still contribute. We can still contribute up to the age of 75, right? Which means the retirement age can jolly well be increased, isn't it? Right now it's 60, and other countries are already considering moving it to 62 and 65 and even 70. And there are some countries, more countries are doing away with it totally. So they leave it to the responsibility of the older person. If you think you can still continue working, apply. Get another job, continue working, or start a business. You're still there. And when it comes to starting a business, right, I've been pushing for this for a long, long time, and I hope it will happen. And that is we must equip, upskill our older people so that they can continue working, re-employment, or even starting their own entrepreneurship, home-based business, for example, right? But they need the skill. Who is that? Can the government open up more? Of course, I'm saying that the government has done something. The private sector has also done something. They have got courses now, workshop. But these are just one-off, right? So if you miss it, gone. And then also we do not know about it. Sometimes I hear my friends telling me, oh, I just finished a workshop on this and that. I say, hey, how come you didn't share with us? Huh? we don't know about it. So, but I'm glad to say that there is progress, right? We are getting more educated. We're getting more aware. So we are starting off and it's good. Everybody benefits in the end. All stakeholders benefit when older people can support themselves.
But Dr. Iswin, is there any point to increasing the retirement age, to providing these kinds of assistance and solutions if the mindset hasn't changed that you don't just give up your independence when you reach a certain age, that you can still thrive and, be in control of your life? From what you described earlier, there are still older adults who want to just completely relax. And it seems to me that part of that mindset might be, I don't want to have to make these decisions anymore. I want to be taken care of.
Yeah. So there are, I think it depends on the individuals. So there are people who thrive in a work environment and they actually feel that, being in work, continuing work, is something that's healthy for their mental health and well-being because they feel physically and mentally they're still able to. So there are people who actually enjoy work and actually become lonely or depressed when they actually, when they resign or they're retired from their work. And we do see this quite a lot, especially my job as a geriatric psychiatrist, where, the trigger for the depression episode is actually retirement or resignation or any major life changes. So for some individuals, it's not the financial aspect of working is actually the social aspect, is being independent, feeling useful, feeling that they're contributing to something, having a routine. Those are the kind of things that they really thrive on. And I think this is why in certain countries, you know, they feel that they can raise the retirement age, because for some individuals, working is something beneficial. You know, I lived in the UK for 20 years, and you know, the retirement age is higher there, but they also have optional retirement, younger age. So, for example, if you work in the mental health services, they have something called a mental health assessor kind of option of retiring at 55. You know, feels a bit younger retiring at 55, but if a lot of your work is involving a lot of mental stress and mental strain, and if you have the funds and you have the employer that's willing to fund your retirement, you know, there's many people that take up because they've been given a choice that, you know, I've spent, you know, 50, 30 years working in a very high intensity mental health job. I think I want to retire at 55. And what Lily mentioned about some certain countries giving people the option, I think it's an excellent idea because every individual is different. Some people want to retire early and they make the appropriate arrangements when they're young, you know, save a lot of money, make sure that they, you know, they work hard when they're young so that they can retire early. And some people feel that actually, no, even when I have enough money, I would be more than happy to still work because of the other aspects that work offers. And I do find that most people that work actually contributes to their mental health and well-being, but they may need probably adjustment at workplace. I think that's quite important. Reduced hours maybe, or less workload. So maybe those kind of things can actually help them have the best of both worlds. And we talked about, Lily mentioned about, you know, sort of an inequality in life and about having to, you know, being able to achieve that balance where you still be able to enjoy your retirement, but still, you know, earn money and have that self-confidence, have that self-worth and have that routine in your life that you're still in employment.
Lily, what kind of planning and decisions should become commonplace for everyone in order to prepare themselves for financial independence in older age?
I think the first thing is that they must take responsibility for themselves, right? Don't expect or take for granted the children will help. They can depend on the children, they can depend on the government or whatever. You yourself, start with that first, right? Prepare as early as possible, take care of yourself. Even though we say that, you know, medical, you know, all the supplements and all that are expensive, they may not afford, but a lot of things, thank goodness, a lot of things are free actually, you know, because it's God, you know, takes care of everyone, right? Even what by this I mean, like, you know, fresh air, sunshine, all this is free, exercise is free, walking is free, right? All this and savings, you can, even if you don't have enough savings, learn to live within your means, right? So don't think, oh, I'm so used to having this kind of lifestyle after retirement, I deserve it. I need to continue like that. I mean, make adjustments. You can get through the, even if you have limited financial resources, plan, budget, do a monthly budget. Then you know how much you need to spend. See whether you can cut down or not and adjust. It's all about adjustment and adapting because that is how we all survive, by adapting and adjusting. Think of dinosaurs, huh? They didn't adapt. You know, they're no longer around today.
and you know, speaking of where I suppose some people still are in need of money, and I think that's where they might be lured into financial scams. Lily, can you weigh in a little bit on this? Because every now and then we read news reports about older adults who are exploited in financial scams, or sometimes they're exploited by, you know, relatives or friends. Well, I say friends in inverted commas as well. You know, how are older adults more vulnerable to these, and what should they look out for?
Okay, I think number one is they are not tech savvy. They are not IT savvy, not tech savvy, right? Number two is that, you know, depending on your circumstances, they just want to get money quick, get rich quick kind of thing, right? And number three, they're pretty naive. Like, you know, older people tend to think well of others. Yes. If somebody else is kind enough, say, hey, I can help you, you know, make a little bit more money and all that, they believe, especially if it comes from a friend or a neighbor, you know, and all that. So they need to be educated. And I think companies, telcos, for example, you know, well, Digi or Maxis or, you know, and or the other companies, right, they should step in as well, right? Because we are at a university of the third age. I don't know whether you've heard of it, U3A, yeah, for older people. They conduct a really great, you know, workshop, a one full day workshop for us to educate us so that we can look out for all these scams. And there's so many scams all the time. The most recent one, which we told the seniors to be aware of, because, you know, older people, they have the vision is not so good lah, sometimes, you know, the eye vision, right? So when they see a link, and it looks very legitimate, you know, it's like a Maybank link or some, you know, but they do not know that the font may be a little bit different. Just one letter, the font is different. It's a trap already. So these are the things that should be told to, you know, point out to them. Be suspicious. Do not answer phone calls that come from a strange number that's not on your contact list. Things like that. They need to be really educated. But like I said, there are always some of, I'll be very interested if the police or, you know, anybody can give us a profile of all those elderly who are scammed. What is their profile? So we will know who are at risk and we can focus on this group, because a lot of the educated ones, right? Sorry to say, but they are more aware, more educated. They read and they know. So they are less likely to be scammed in that sense.
From your perspective, Dr. Izwin, are there certain older adults, you know, who would be considered higher risk or more vulnerable, need perhaps certain targeted education or awareness towards them when it comes to recognizing financial scams?
So yes, the older adults who I think are more socially isolated tend to be more vulnerable because they feel that they couldn't ask anyone if they receive such scams or texts or you know, phishing, those kind of things. So the socially isolated ones, as Lily mentioned, the ones that are not very much exposed to what goes on around them, or read or attend courses or webinars. And I guess the ones that I suppose have, you know, a feel a bit sort of low self-confidence, and they feel like, you know, if they get these things that, you know, like they have to do something about it. So there are people who are people pleasers, you know, who feel like, you know, I've got to respond to this, I've got to help these people. And these can be quite, you know, these are the individuals that can be quite vulnerable. But also sometimes this could also be a sign that they may have, you know, cognitive difficulties. So it may be an early sign of dementia that this person may have lower cognitive reserves. So, you know, something that usually they can use their higher processing skills to say, look, the judgment here is there's something wrong here. I'm going to go and ask around. The planning may not be available because they have, you know, they have early signs of dementia or mild cognitive impairment. So the brain's already fragile and affected, or they may have small strokes in the brain. So they may have, you know, some issues processing complex things. So they may not necessarily, you know, have that mental ability to make that link between scams and you know, not responding to scams. And I think most importantly, you know, as Lily mentioned, it is about education. But, you know, how many of us actually, you know, listen to the education or receive the education? People who probably live in more rural areas may not necessarily receive such education or information about scams. Although I can hear, you know, from radios and things, the government is trying their best in terms of trying to spread this a lot further. However, I agree, you know, I think we do need to reach a lot further, especially, you know, not just focusing on the educated people, but also, you know, targeting people who are also in the rural areas who may not necessarily have access to all the information.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Doctor, on this. Mm-hmm. The rural areas, we really need to reach out to them.
Yes, it's not just for rich people in KL at the time.
Yeah,
unfortunately, right. they do go for the, you know, the rural people in Kelantan with lots of, you know, lots of land and finance, with wealth. So yes, it is about educating, you know, reaching the education towards all aspects, you know, all lengths of Malaysia.
Dr. Iswin, I think, you know, if you're talking about sort of some impaired cognitive processes, and then that could lead to poor financial decisions. What else, you know, if I were a family member, a loved one, a caregiver of an older adult, what might be some red flags that I should look out for, particularly subtle ones that related to financial decisions that may indicate some impairment in cognitive processing?
Okay, so there's, you know, so there's sort of, you can start with very, very small minor ones. So for example, what's their calculation ability? So if someone gives, you know, if someone says, this is costing 28 ringgit, can the person actually give the right amount of money or accept the right amount of change? You know, count the change. So 28 ringgit, so I should be getting, you know, 22 ringgit back. You know, so it's sometimes it's little subtle things. You know, if someone says, okay, my charges are 20 ringgit per hour, they work for 6 hours, so it should be 120 ringgit. So it's looking at these little calculative abilities to see how they are. So being able to, accurately calculate means that they're usually still able to do the basic things. But if they start to falter in those areas, that's a red flag. You know, that they can't correctly count change, they can't give pay people the right amount of money for the amount of work, you know, they're paying plumbers wrongly. Or for example, if they are overcharged things, that's also red flags. So if someone comes to repair the house and then you ask, you know, as a son or a family member, you ask, okay, how much is that for the toilet repair? And they say, oh yeah, the guy charged me 1,000, I just paid. That's a red flag. So sometimes it's very important to check on your loved ones, how much, you know, how much they are paying. And there are people who do prey on vulnerable older adults, overcharging, you know, trying to sort of scam them in that way, thinking, okay, they'll pay more for, you know, big house or they charge more. So, you know, those are the red flags to look out for. Other things, as you say, is poor financial decisions, you know, making, I suppose, like purchasing things that I suppose you feel that, okay, this isn't appropriate. So, for example, buying very expensive things which you don't think actually meets their needs or, you know, their requirements, or, you know, mentioning about buying property that you feel, why would you need more property when actually you should be saving your cash? So those can be quite red flags because it can signal a change in judgment. And judgment is one of the signs, early signs of cognitive issue. You know, your frontal lobe, which is the part of your brain that controls judgment, may start to become impaired. And of course, if you also notice all the other red flags suggestive of dementia, so, you know, short-term memory difficulties, not remembering what they did the day before, getting lost, you know, not being able to do the daily tasks as they used to, forgetting how to cook, not being able to drive, not remembering who the people they know are. So those are kind of the array of things to watch out for. But you're right, in terms of, you know, poor financial decisions, that can be an early sign as well. That there may be early signs of a cognitive issue developing.
So, Lily, on the flip side, right, it might be tempting for family members to say, let me handle everything for you, lah. You know, you're making a lot of mistakes. And then slowly, perhaps children start to take over control. And then there goes that independence, you know, that we want older adults to have. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, this whole question is very individualized, right? It depends on the individual older person and the family background and so forth. But I still think that ultimately, you know, older people, they like to have a say in what the decisions, because they are of that age, they deserve some respect, right? But I can also understand, not because by being, you know, not very tech savvy, and not keeping up with the times, right? So they might not be aware of certain things out there. Like, what are the best investments? Like, for me, for example, right, I really don't touch any stock exchange or shares, buy all these things, because I don't have the knowledge for it. It's a huge risk. And I have to be very protective of my money, my retirement savings. I'm not going to let, you know, I'm not going to put it. And by the way, we elderly, the retirees, they are a target for a lot of people, because they know that we have a pool. Those have been drawn, right? We have a pool of money somewhere, you know, somewhere lah. And they are trying to get us to part with it. So that's why, you know, they will present all kinds of scams and everything. So in a way, I think that if you're not sure, you yourself know yourself best. whether you have the financial knowledge or not. If not, please let your adult children handle it for you. But you also, at the same time, you must also have faith and trust in your children. If they are also in the same boat as you, I mean, their own financial commitments have not been very good also, or whatever they have invested in. You know, there is a record that you can look at. If they are not that savvy themselves, I don't know. Maybe you are better off, you know, taking care of your own finances than passing the whole, you know, decision-making to them. So that's how I feel about it.
Tricky situation. Family dynamics are so complex, and you always hear about that's where some breakdowns can occur. Considering this big conversation that we've had today, we've looked policy, we've looked traditional and cultural mindsets, and we've looked at at the family and community level, some practices and things that we can look out for. A final message, perhaps from each of you, in terms of ensuring better financial security and social protection for our older adults. Lily, first, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it goes back again. I always say in every talk I give, right, is that start with yourself. Right? Don't look outside. Start with yourself. Educate yourself. It's so easy to get education, get knowledge now. It's like Google, the media, and all friends. Even if you're not so savvy, right, your friends can help you, your children. Look, if you really, really want to look after yourself and protect yourself, you make the first move. You find whatever you can that will help you enjoy your retirement comfortably, and make sure you sacrifice a bit. You have to sacrifice, you have to adapt. It's the same message I give. But the problem with people is that, listen, they know, but they don't apply, right? We know all the tips, all the advice. Everybody says the same thing. And yet, how come there are still people get scammed? How come there are still people who do not take care of their health, who are suffering from comorbidities, chronic illnesses, and, you know, mental depression and so on? Why? They know it, but they don't do it. It's like smoking, they know. But they still smoke. So what to do? What to do? We have to take responsibility for ourselves. Yes?
Perhaps as a first step, Lily, maybe you can provide a resource. For instance, you mentioned University of the Third Age. Where can people go? Is there a website that people can just go and look up what workshops they can attend?
Oh, yes. We offer courses, short courses on digital skills, for example. We offer courses on entrepreneurship for seniors, focusing on seniors. So we have all these courses that will help the seniors. We have financial management as well, retirement planning, right? So you can Google us, University of the Third Age, KL, Kuala Lumpur, Selangor, because there are a few other branches as well. We are the main ones. We offer 50 plus courses. They also teach you skills, for example, cooking or making something, right? So you can earn, you can have an income yourself, independent of your children. So these are some of the measures we have taken. Yes.
All right. So do look up University of the Third Age, Malaysia specifically, and check out the courses. Dr. Izwin, a final message from you?
Yes, I think mine echoes what Lily's been mentioning as well. I think one of my take-home message is, firstly, it is about starting early. I think the awareness should actually start to people my age, in fact, you know, by making sure that we save, we rely on ourselves to plan our retirement. You know, the whole idea of, oh, my children will provide for me isn't going to be necessarily the case anymore. Your children might have their own financial constraints and financial issues. So it's about, what Lily said, it's about looking after me. And I think we need to start, we need to start educating people to do a little bit more of that, save, put aside more money, not just assets, but also cash. And other things that the person could also look at is in terms of, losing capacity. I guess that's the other thing that I think, I see quite a lot in my clinic is having a lasting power of attorney. For people who may lose capacity, for example, if they have cognitive difficulties, because the older people may also be faced with a new problem, whereby they can't remember their PIN, they can't remember how to access their own funding in the bank. So being prepared for that, I always stress whenever I do a new dementia diagnosis, for example, coming from a clinician point of view, please prepare yourself. for the eventuality that you may not be able to access your money if you lose your financial, you know, your mental faculties to do so. And so there might be things that, you know, mentioned about getting legal ways of doing this. And another sort of take home message for me is about making sure, you know, financial health is very closely linked to mental health. Having not enough funds to support yourself in terms of health, emotional well-being, and even the pleasurable activities can actually impact on your mental health and well-being. And as Lily said, yes, you do need to cut your cloth accordingly. If you are retired, you may not be able to afford a lot of the things that you used to afford when you are younger. However, you know, still make time for the things that you do enjoy. I think the other things I've often advised people is, as much as we want to give a lot to our children and grandchildren, please think that, you know, life is not a sprint, it's a marathon. You may be around for the next 10 to 20 years. I've heard stories about people who, you know, get the EPF, you know, get all this money, and suddenly say, oh, I'm going to give 100,000 to my son to buy a house for himself. And suddenly left thinking, I don't have any money to eat myself. And, you know, I can't get the money back from my son. So then they're left in this kind of like, you know, financially destitute situation. So, you know, please think about, you know, that you know, life expectancy is longer now for Malaysians as it was before. And it's about living a good life. I think that's the important thing that we want to stress here, that you want to be comfortable. You want to be able to eat what you want to eat. You want to be able to do what you want to do. You want to be financially and also socially independent. So those are the important things. You don't want to live your elderly life trapped in a place where your family, your children say, no, you can't do anything that you want because we can't afford it, because you've never had the money you saved to buy these things. So, you know, think about how you want to be when you are older, and start early. I think it's the take-home message for me.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Lily Fu, gerontologist and founder of Seniors Aloud, and Dr. Wan Izwin Wan Hassan, consultant psychiatrist specializing in geriatric psychiatry. You've been listening to Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.